This episode of the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Peter, look, it's Dave and Dottie, the nudists.
Well, hey there, Griffins.
Dave, Dottie, what a pleasant surprise.
Don't tell me you're Kiss freaks, too.
Kiss Army soldiers since 1977. How about you?
76? I don't think anyone knows more about Kiss than I do.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Peter, it's not important.
Let him answer, Lois.
I said no one knows more about Kiss than I do.
Fellas, please keep it civil.
I'm not sure I like the tone of your voice, Dave.
Well, throw down, if that's what you want.
Name Gene Simmons' special effects mentor.
Amazo the Magician. What high school did Paul Stanley go to?
New York High School of Music. Paul and Gene's band before Kiss.
Wicked Lester. What year did Kiss appear on the Jim Neighbors Halloween special?
Trick question. It was Paul Lynde, and it was 1975. Now recite the magazine ad that brought Peter Criss to Paul and Gene's attention.
Drummer willing to do anything to make it. Rolling Stone, October 1972. Exemplary.
Rock and roll. Let's go to Denny's.
Oh, man, I don't believe it. Kiss is here.
We don't deserve to be under the same roof with them. Let's go.
Well, all right. I guess I could fix us something when we... Hiem?
Lois, do not address Kiss unless they address you first.
Oh, my God. Hiem Witz. It is you.
Which one do you want me to sign, left or right?
No. It's Lois. Lois Pudeschmidt. I knew you before you changed your name.
Lois. I don't believe it. It's Menages. Hey, guys, this is the girl I told you about. You know, I knew her before we formed KISS.
Luce Lois.
Cool. Luce Lois.
The legend herself.
My grand slam was supposed to be with Sausage.
I never realized you were Gene Simmons, the rock star.
You look great, Lois. Anyone nailing you now?
Yes, my husband nails me. This is him, Peter.
You are gods!
Yeah, thanks, right. Hey, we're recording some tracks in Boston next month. You should come on by.
Oh, we'd love that, Hiem. I mean, Gene, you big rock star. Bye. Oh, wow. Such a small world. He was a nice boy. And he's still nice.
Listen, Lois, what I said before, I've never been more wrong in my life. You are the coolest girl in the world. My wife did Kiss.
And Jake Isles.
What?
Nothing.
Hey, this is Gene Simmons.
And this is Paul Stanley from Kiss. You are broadcasting from deep within the Kiss Nation. You're listening to The Rick Emerson Show.
Minutes after the hour of one, and this the month of November in the year of our Lord 2010. Thank you for coming along and making it part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, America's home for laughs since slightly earlier this year. Thank you for joining us. It is 503-505-6964. If you would like to be part of today's program, 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. That is the number to call with whatever device you might have. Whether it's a rotary dial phone, maybe it's an internet telephony device, maybe it's a brand new shiny iPhone that glows in your hand like a beaming brick of electronic gold. It's 503-505-6964 for your comments, questions, clarifications, observations, conventions, ruminations, ponderings, musings, recipes. Maybe a limerick, maybe a haiku, maybe something done in trochaic tectometer.
A couplet.
Or a couplet, sure. And this is all true. You can also Skype if you like. The direct Skype number, the username is Rick Emerson Show. That is Rick Emerson Show via Skype. You can also get us in the text box at Rick Emerson Show on the Rick Emerson website. Or you can email. It is dawn@rickemerson.com, D-A-W-N at rickemerson.com, or Rick, R-I-C-K, at rickemerson.com. It's 503-505-6964. 604 503 505 6964. Thank you for joining us on this Monday. Coming up, we have Clown Watch, Taser Watch, Geek Watch coming up today. Also, we'll do the top five. And I feel like after last Thursday's whole debacle with the Satan songs and the devil songs, the thing that I just sort of wrote down casually and colloquially to myself as I left the house, which then became like a federal case as soon as I got here to the show, I should say these are not songs about zombies as such. These are just songs. These are just songs, the title of which contains the word zombie. Sometimes they're about regular zombies, sometimes they ain't. Just songs that have zombie in the title somewhere. So there you go. I'm referring to them in a sort of verbal shorthand as zombie songs. But just in case anybody wants to check the sites to make sure that I'm conveying the theme of the top five accurately, that is said theme.
I have no doubt that whatever you've done is completely accurate.
Fine.
And falling well within the parameters of the given top five.
Okay. So you're not going to call the AP style book and have them take me out back and flog me for it?
Not this time.
Okay. It is the Rick Emerson radio program, so that's all on the way. Clown Watch, Taser Watch, Geek Watch, top five songs with zombie in the title. Aaron Duran with The Week in Geek. He will join us later on this hour for The Week in Geek. We'll have to figure out some way to address all of the television that is now upon us. There was this glorious moment where there was like one show that we were watching on Sunday. I think it was maybe not even that, because it might have been a week where it was just Dexter, and then not even really Dexter if you're Dawn, because really I'm the only one keeping up with it. I'm holding up the Dexter side of the studio right now, and it's grudgingly, by the way. I do it out of a sense of obligation. You know what Dexter is? Dexter is a relationship where the spark has just gone out. It's been chewed away like flavor from old gum.
Yeah.
But you kind of just keep chewing because it's what you do. Because it's what you always have after lunch. So you're like, well, I guess I'll just pick myself up some Double Mint because it's what I've done for 5 years.
Whereas I, on the other hand, have given up that gum.
You've moved on.
I have stuck that gum underneath the table of apathy.
Well done. That's way better than the Phenomint reference that I was going to make. So we don't have Batman, but we now have Dexter. We have Eastbound and Down, which now has just one episode left for the season finale. So last night, Eastbound and Down was episode 6 of season 2, which I do believe is chapter 12. And I believe there are 13 chapters created thus far. So I think we got one more episode, okay, which is next week. Because I think last season was 6 episodes. The first season was 6 episodes. I think this season is 7 episodes.
Yeah, I wasn't sure when I watched it last night if this was actually the end or not.
Because you can never tell.
And the episode ended in such a way that it could have been the season end,
The thing about that show is every episode, it's like with Barry Manilow, every song is a showstopper. With Eastbound and Down, every episode is a finale. Every episode ends with Kenny going, well, it looks like I'm going to have to go, looks like I'm going to have to go do what needs to be done. And then, he puts on a coat, he puts on it like a coat or a jacket or a tie, or he puts on a hat, or he adjusts some article of clothing while, a Ram Jam song is playing on the soundtrack. And then he just walks slowly to the camera and it says, directed by Jordy Hill. You can never tell if the season has just wrapped or not. Can I just tell you, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here. We never talked about the Eastbound and Down from like 2 weeks back, and Seamus, to his credit, he sent me like 5 emails reminding us to do it, and then he never said like, I give up and I wash my hands. He just stopped sending them. He just said, fine, whatever. He moved on with his life. Real quick, because I felt bad because we kept saying we were going to do it and we never did, and every day he would try to send me a polite sort of, don't forget, today you're going to talk about Eastbound and Down, and there was just so much going on we didn't get a chance to. If I can just duck back to a couple of weeks ago, that episode of Eastbound and Down, that I think it would have been the 24th, so it would have been a week ago, Sunday. It was the episode that ended with him going onto the baseball diamond and riding around on the donkey or something and shooting the gun into the air.
Oh, yeah.
And he threw the soccer ball in the air and he fired at it with the pistol. And Seamus brought up something that I thought maybe I was the only one that had occurred to you. Did you wonder for just a moment if it was just going to go horribly sideways and he was just going to shoot somebody or himself?
Yeah, I did.
Because it's not like it would be outside the realm of possibility. And this is the thing that Seamus brought up that was so great. He said, in a weird way, how glorious would it have been if, even though there are 7 episodes in the season, if it's episode 6, Kenny had just shot himself. He had just gone, all right, my Mexican brothers, dead.
And now the rest of the season just about Stevie.
Yeah, and I mean, the final episode, it just would have been epilogue. It would have been coda at that point.
Oh, God.
All right. Well, in any event. We'll talk about Eastbound and Down. Did you watch Walking Dead?
I did indeed.
All right. And you don't watch Dexter. And frankly, let's be honest, I'm only 3/4 of the way through last night's Dexter. That was a thing, again, where I was just distracted literally by socks. Because I had Dexter in the background and I'm doing my laundry or whatever. And it was that thing where let me ask you this. Here's a question I have for you before we get on. And I'm delaying the discussion of your shiny new iPhone just as long as possible.
That's all right.
Just to keep you on tenterhooks, as they say.
I have the iPhone. I have the satisfaction of owning an iPhone. If we don't talk about it, that's fine. It doesn't matter. I can just reach over here and touch it.
I can just
stroke it with my fingertips.
Do you find yourself taking it out every now and again just to stare at it?
I do.
Yeah.
I actually put it aside for a while to, like, you know, recharge it. Because I played with it for like 6 hours straight or something on Saturday and put it aside to charge it. And then I was using my laptop and I was like looking across the room at it, And finally I just got up and went over and just did something on it just because.
Why use a full-size computer? So we'll talk about your iPhone purchase here in just a moment. There's just a couple of things to relate. One, so if everybody's watching Dexter and feels like I'm your proxy, I apologize for letting you down like week after week after week. Because I get it watched. Here's the thing. Rick Emerson doesn't do anything halfway. I get it done. It just takes me longer. Than it used to. Many men have the same problem.
And then is it just gone from your brain? Just what you watched?
Pretty much. It's the thing about that show is it's like cotton candy at this point.
Certainly haven't come into work on Mondays eager to discuss it.
Oh, my God, did you see Dexter last night? No, here's the thing about Dexter. We had heard from some people, there were critics who said, well, it starts off slow, you know, and maybe it's not quite as good as, like, the Lithgow season, but then really what could be? Because you watched the Lithgow season all the way through, right?
Oh, I did indeed, yeah.
As critics said, well, it's not really that great, but it does pick up. And I thought, well, okay, you know what? They've given me a few years of, quality entertainment. The least I can do is just to stick it out and see if Dexter comes around in season 5. All of the things that remain wrong with the show have been wrong with the show for the longest time. I mean, it's just like, I don't care about Angel Batista and Lieutenant LaGuardia. I don't care about that. I don't really care about Quinn and Dexter's sister getting it on. I get that what's his name, Matsuka, the lab guy, is that creepy and sex-obsessed and whatever. I mean, all of the things that are just sort of the takeaway from the actual thrust of the show, that's fine. But you figure, well, if the main core of the program, which is Dexter Morgan, sociopath, which you think would be easier to do now, because here's the thing about the show, is that not only is his wife dead, they got rid of that wife of his, but his kids are gone now, too. And I don't know if they're going to come back. I'm presuming there'll be some sort of horrible Spielberg-esque, tedious reunion at the end of the season. But they've packed the kids off to live with the grandparents. They're gone, baby. They haven't been on for like 2-3 weeks. And I was thinking, aha, you know, they've returned him to his life as a swinging, single-killing bachelor. Things are going to happen. But this is a spoiler, lol. So if anybody, you don't want to be spoiled, whatever. Really, you're just straining it. You're straining at nothing there if that's a concern for you. So they've paired Dexter with this apprentice is the deal. There's some chick that was, like, kidnapped and, I don't know, like, gang-raped in a closet for 5 months or something. And Dexter inadvertently rescues her and kills the guy that was holding her hostage. And so he can't let her go because she's seen him and she can identify him as Dexter Morgan, a killer, and whatever. It's this really unbelievably contrived thing just to, like, tether her to this woman who I think is, I want to say Julia Stiles. Could that possibly be right?
What else is she doing? I don't know.
She was that chick in that House of Glass movie, but not the one in prison with Alan Alda.
Okay.
Is that right? Have I got the right woman? Well, whatever. It doesn't matter. The point is they've chained Dexter to this apprentice woman. But so the result of him having an apprentice, and she doesn't know anything, and also she's unstable because the closet raping. What you now have is a show where she screws things up by trying to kill people because she's all broken and whatever. And you get the feeling she kind of was beforehand. So she tries to kill somebody or she tries to go on and commit a crime. She makes a mess of it. And then Dexter is like the Mr. Wolf who has to sort of show up and be her cleaner, which then results in endless tedious scenes of Dexter walking around and her going, what are you doing? Why are you spraying that? What are you getting his wallet for? What's luminol? What's all the blue stuff? What should I do with the body? How do I boil bones? What are we doing here? Who's that? What are you spraying? Why do we boil bones? And I think at one point last night, I was going in the background, and I was doing my laundry. Let me ask you this. Now, you ladies, you wear socks.
Yeah.
Women be shopping, and women be wearing socks, Don.
Yes.
When you pair your socks, and they're not like guy socks. It's like you wear tube socks or like a guy does, just like a regular athletic sock most of the time. But if you do, how do you pair them?
I put them together ankle to ankle, and then I turn one over the other.
Okay, so you, there's the three different things. There's the tucking one inside the other. There's the folding them over together at the top, like right. dog earing them almost. I am the only person who does what I do. I tie them in a knot. I just, you know, put them in like an X, and then I bring them together on time, just because that's how my mom did them. I think because I was a kid and she didn't want me to lose them. So I'm pairing all my socks last night, turning into a woman, apparently, and just sitting there and just doing laundry and, you know, brushing and folding and, you know, and stacking and sorting, putting all my laundry away. And then the thing happened where I was like one sock odd at the end. And, of course, I paused Dexter because then the rest of my night became, my whole life became about the missing sock at that point. And I was just walking around downstairs, looking in every crevasse, looking in every opening downstairs, looking in the dryer, looking in the washer, looking behind the dryer, looking behind, looking in the lint trap, looking in the freezer. Looking inside my pants to see if they'd fallen inside there.
I suppose that shouldn't surprise me that you would become obsessive about, like, one
I get it.
Sock.
The only reason I say that is, that actually took up then so much time and so much interest for me that I forgot to turn Dexter back on, and so I have no idea how the episode ended. But we can talk Eastbound and Down, Walking Dead, all of that stuff on the way. I had some other stuff to mention, but I won't. I'll talk more. Enough about me, Don.
Yeah?
My one final note here, and I posted this on the... I posted this on Facebook. I said actually earlier that I was tempted to... I think I said this during Legion of News. I was tempted to post a sort of... kind of snarky meta sort of a thing in on Facebook or on Twitter about, like, you know, I sure hope Dawn isn't one of those people who goes on and on about her glorious iPhone, because those people are irritating as hell. And then with like a hashtag, and I put something, you know, like not really Lerv's iPhone or something. So I didn't post that because, frankly, all the comments are still going strong for this thing that I posted yesterday. Did you see the thing that I put up about being at the mall?
No.
So I went to the mall yesterday, and boy, let me just tell you this. It's not like I really care because malls are full of people anyway, but I hadn't really put together the whole thing about lame-ass suburban parents and non-suburban parents even now taking their kids to go trick-or-treating at the mall, because your kid's life isn't just, like, denuded and candy-coated enough. You haven't done enough to strip all of the excitement and joy out of your children's existence. Make them afraid to trick-or-treat. Take them to the mall so they can get something from Harry Ritchie's Jewelers. So I go to the mall and I open it. I'm like, that's cool. What's going on here? And it seemed for a moment like I was in Monroeville, and there was just people walking everywhere, and I thought, not much space in this mall. What's going on? And then I realized there was just thousands of kids there trick-or-treating. Which, again, doesn't bother me because I don't like people. But when I go to the mall, like, it's somehow I just don't notice people at the mall. It's like in Vegas. I don't notice people there, I guess, because that's just the deal, you know? Like, I have no expectation of solitude. So I'm walking through the mall, and this guy comes up to me. And it was outside, not surprisingly, outside of Spencer's Gifts. Like, as you're walking... I guess you're walking past Spencer's Gifts, and I forget what it's... Maybe I was going to Radio Shack or something, because I was looking for something for my iPhone. There's no Apple store there and whatever. But I'm walking past Spencer's Gifts, and this guy comes up, and I don't think he was in a Halloween costume. I think this is... He was wearing like a basketball jersey kind of a thing with, like, the other shirt underneath it or whatever. And just kind of this, like, I don't know, this late 20s guy with, like, spiky hair or whatever. And he comes up, and he goes, "Hey." And I said, "Hey." And I'll read this off Facebook. I posted this right after. He says, "Are you Rick Emerson?" And I said, "Yes." And he says, "Where's your bitches?" And here's the thing. Normally, it's like I like to think that I'm pretty fast on my feet. And that I can respond to most questions, even if I was not expecting them, with a modicum of intelligence, without like an undue delay. I really have to say that I was not prepared for that question. I had no pre-made answer. And really, it was one of those things where I had to look deep within myself and say, my God, man, really, metaphysically and philosophically speaking, where are your bitches? And so, but what came, and, you know, in my head, I was like, I don't know. What does it say about me that he expected my bitches to be present? Who would my bitches be? Am I my own bitch? Are there multiple bitches? Is this, long interest. But what actually came out of my mouth was nothing, followed by, followed by nothing. And then he just kind of chucked me on the shoulder and walked off. And that was it.
Oh, so you didn't even get a chance
I got
to
nothing.
Well, ask him what he meant by that.
No, I just, well, because I don't know whether he actually just left of his own. Like, I didn't get a chance to see anything. I don't know if he was with his kid or if there was, like,
trigger.
If he was swept away just on a tide of candy-grabbing humanity or if he was actually there with family or something. But
where's your bitches?
But it was like after clarifying that I was Rick Emerson. Are you Rick Emerson? Yes. Where's your bitches? I mean, what would you... Don, where's your bitches? See? Right there? There's nothing.
There's nothing to say
to
there's
all this Monday morning quarterbacking, of course, going on Facebook about, you know, like, what I should have responded with. But, I mean, that's...
Yeah.
That's not a thing that you can just sort of have a stock answer ready for.
No.
And really, it's probably not even a thing you know about yourself. That's information that you're not privy to because you've never really properly given it the analysis it deserves.
That's true.
Jesus. All right, well, in any event. How was your weekend, Don? Did you do anything interesting? Or did you just stay at home tapping against a brightly lit square for a couple of days?
Well, there was some of that. Yes, indeed. There was a bit of that.
I posted a thing on Facebook. I just relayed your message where you just texted me and you said, hey, here's my new phone number from my iPhone. This is Don. Bam! Exclamation mark. So, all right, go ahead. Have at it. You've waited long enough. Walk me through it.
I know. I don't... You know, the thing is, I don't know if I really want to actually talk about it that much. Because it's a visceral experience.
Oh, please, don't just say, like, it's just a phone. Oh, it's
no.
Just it's a thing that words can't do justice to. That's what you're saying.
No. I feel such love for this thing that it's uncanny.
Yeah.
It's frightening, the affection I feel for this phone.
It's less a phone than a pet that does a lot of great tricks.
Well, yeah, because because to actually make it do things, you end up petting it.
Yes.
Because you
it's almost like they designed it that way.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, and it's and the things like I downloaded a few apps and they went what?
OMG. Okay, seriously. They need to create an iPhone app where when you pet it, it purrs.
Yeah.
Look, you kids out there, you men, let's have no illusions. I realize that's a stupid and useless application. That would sell.
Oh, it would.
That would sell like nobody's
business. There are applications that are even stupider and more useless than that.
All right, I'm sorry. Go ahead. So you're petting your iPhone.
I'm petting my iPhone, yeah, and I wanted to make sure I didn't want to spend a bunch of money, so I've only installed like one app that actually cost me 99 cents. But I've, you know, put in the things
so
that I
ridiculous.
Need.
Ridiculous.
You know, just going, well, I'm going to have to be on Facebook.
You just paid hundreds of dollars for a phone. 99 cents. I don't know. That seems excessive.
I don't want to become one of those people that just starts, you know...
buying things for your product.
Well, spending money and not thinking about it. Uh-huh. Because that's the thing. They make it too easy. You go in the app store and they go, here, buy this. You go click and you've bought it.
Yes.
And I don't want to, like, even go down that road without thinking about it. Because
Is this like you weren't going to go down the iPhone road?
Well, you know what it's like with something like iTunes, for example. It's only 99 cents a song, and I'll buy this song, and this song, and this song. And then you're like... crap, I just spent $30.
I'm broke.
Know? Yeah. So, but yeah, I've taken a couple of pictures with the camera. And one of the things, we were in the car. I was with my husband. We had gone to...
You made him drive home so you could sit there and pet your new phone, didn't you?
Well, yeah, I think I did.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know.
Although I got it at the AT&T store. There's just like one freeway exit down from my house. So it's not like I had to wait a long time. But the guy was awesome at the AT&T store, though, too, because I guess, like all the guys, they were talking about their iPhones. So I guess they all use iPhones, too. And he knew, I guess in the same way that the Apple store people knew, he knew what a big deal this was for me.
Yeah.
Even while I was kind of downplaying it, like... yeah, I need a new phone. Yes. Yeah, I'll give me a new phone number because I don't remember what my damn account number is with my virtual thing and blah, blah, blah. And so, but then when it came time to actually give me the phone after I'd paid for it and done all the paperwork, he came around the counter and said, step over here. And I said, okay. And I walked over and he handed it to me ceremoniously, like here. And he said, here is your new phone.
He's like a concierge.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, those guys,
pretty awesome.
They have... I don't know if it's a script as such. I mean, it probably is to some degree, but you know, they walk them, they manage every step of that sales process, every step of how what they say to you, how they approach it, the nomenclature, the lexicon. Like when he said, "Here is your new phone," I have no doubt. I mean, I don't know for sure, but I'd bet you anything that they are actually given certain phrases that they must use and certain ways that they have to present the thing. whether it's good or bad, right or wrong, dumb, you know, or not, whether it's a waste of time, that is all relative. But that is a thing where that is like the detail aspect of Apple and of Steve Jobs. Did they do the thing? Did they conduct the entire transaction like on an iPhone?
No.
See, sorry, I got mine at the Apple store where they to show off, just like in case you're not sold or if you're buying something else, like, well, I'm here just to buy some cables. They actually will just do the entire thing. They'll ring you up on an iPhone, which like has a cash register app or something, just to like drive home the point that like, look at this glorious oracle of a product I hold in my hand.
The guy was like thrilled with me though, because I'm the kind of customer that I guess they don't really get that often, where I walked in and said, you know, I want the iPhone 3GS. Like, okay. And then it was like, do you want a new number? Yeah.
Right.
Because I don't have this. Okay. Do you want it to be a 503 number? I'm like, sure. I don't really care, though. That's fine. Then he's like, do you know what kind of, have you had a chance to look at what your option? I'm like, yes, I want this, and this. He's like, well, okay then.
Right.
You know, it was just.
Yeah.
So he seemed very pleased that I just walked in. This is what I want. Here's my money. Gimme, you know. But, played with it all Saturday night and, like, loaded a few things that I needed, like Dragon Dictation and, you know, saw what Facebook was like on it and did that whole process where with most of these things, you have to put stuff in the first time.
Well, yeah, you have to register your login. Yeah. Your login information, yeah.
You know, and I watched, it's like on Sunday while we watched Walking Dead, I spent part of Walking Dead sitting there just manually inputting all these phone numbers off my other phone because I,
right.
You know. But yeah, Sunday we got up, we went to brunch. I took Patrick back to Simpatica.
Oh, it was your anniversary, was it?
It was our anniversary.
Happy anniversary. Sunday,
and we went to Simpatica, and he had the, well, it was very weird. First of all, we got to Simpatica, and it's like communal, so they seat you at tables with other people. Like, you know.
That doesn't seem like a place you'd go to. Communal eating?
I know, but the food is awesome.
Oh, God, is it one of those things where you had to sit on a mat on the floor and you had to wash your hands in a finger bowl?
No, they just have a couple of really long tables, and then they have some bigger tables, and if, like, you're a party of two, they'll set you at a four-top with, like, two other people. But what was strange was we got there, and they're like, oh, here, and they take us back to this little alcove to sit at a four-top with two other people, and those two people are Patrick Allen Coleman, who the recently ex-food editor from the Mercury, and his wife. And Patrick Allen Cole was on my radio show, Hemphysis Radio, twice. So I was like, hey! So I got to sit and have brunch with Patrick Allen Coleman, which was bizarre.
Well, you have brunch with a food critic. It seems like that's going to work out well, too, because they're afraid to screw that guy.
Well, it's also nice because I kind of had an idea of what I wanted to order. And then when the food came to the table, he had gotten what I was going to order. So I was like, I've chosen well.
Hey, let me just ask you this, though. I hate to seize on this. It's like Lara Travis tried to get me to go to this place called Marrakesh one time. It's like some, I don't know, some Indian place or whatever. And she was like, okay, they have this and this. And she was showing me the website. And she's like, you know, because she knows how difficult it is to get me to go to a new restaurant, someplace I've never been before. And they're showing me the menu and the whatever. And I said, okay. And then I said, well, wait a minute. What's this photo here? Because it's where they've scanned in, like, a lot of the, you know, the menu. And then they have, like, a lot of, you know, photographs showing the ambience and the atmosphere. And I said, what's happening here at this restaurant? What's this jazz over here? And she said, well, that's the thing. Well, you know, you sit around a table and there are no chairs. There's just like a low pad on the floor.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, and what is happening in the photograph here with these diners? And she said, I swear to God, she said, well, you just put out your hand and somebody comes by and towels your hand off. And I was like, no, done, eject.
That's because you're eating with your fingers.
Out
of a big bowl that everybody else is eating with their fingers,
and
too.
And I said that. I said, why are my hands dirty? What is wrong with the restaurant? Have I gone to the bathroom and I don't know how to use the tissue? Why no one show me how the shells work? Why is somebody washing off my hands? And she said, well, because it's, you know, you eat with your hands. And I was like, okay, you're eating with your hands. I'm eating here at home. Have a nice night.
Yeah. That's not going to happen.
All right.
But we went to the brunch. I had, Patrick had the chicken fried bison that was delicious. I took a bite of it. And I don't usually like chicken fried gravy things that much, but it was delicious. And I had a corned beef and tasso sausage hash with caramelized onions and things. It was just awesome. So we went home. On the way home, we stopped at the mall so I could get the invisible shield for my iPhone.
Well done.
And it turns out that first thing when they first open on Sunday at like 11, that's apparently old person skate at the skating rink.
Was it at Lloyd Center?
Yeah.
Have you noticed this? I mean, it's like when the mall first opens, it's old persons everything.
Yeah.
Old people walk in the perimeter, you know, just, you know, with their like color coordinated ankle and wrist weights. Old people there getting like a food special at the Cajun Grill. Old people roller skating.
But yeah, this was all like 50 or 60 and over ice skating.
Totally.
On the skating rink, which was really odd. And I got the iPhone covered with the lovely Invisual Shield, so now I don't have to be afraid of scratching it. And we were driving home. We were leaving and driving around and doing some things. And Patrick said, you know, are there any movies like you really want to see? And I said, I don't know.
Did he just do that? Was he lobbing one to you? Was he just doing a... Boy, Don, I really wish we could see a movie if only there was some way to determine what might be playing in this area.
No, I don't think he's really that crafty.
All right.
But what he did was he said, any movies you want? And I said, I said, I don't know. I'm not even sure what's in theaters right now. I haven't really been paying that much attention. He goes,
doo-doo-doo. I'm sorry. What? I think there was Aaron. Aaron inadvertently just appeared on the screen. Sorry.
Ed Patrick goes, well, you know, maybe like Fandango has like an iPhone app or something. I said, I'll bet they do. And I whipped out the phone and looked it up and went, yes, they do. And went, click, and immediately downloaded the iPhone app, the Fandango app, like in a minute and a half. And then it said, can we use your current location? I said, sure. And then it was like, here's all the movies playing all around you. And I was going, I love my phone. I love my phone so much.
You just turned into Chris Farley right there. You haven't seen Tommy Boy, so I can't. You don't even get the reference. You just turned into Tommy Boy when he's sitting in the restaurant right before he tears the roll up. You kids out there, you know what I'm talking about. All right. Well, congratulations, Don.
Thank you.
I'm happy for your new purchase.
Thank you.
All right. I feel like, you know what I feel like we just did now? I feel like we just completed the scene between Jack Lemmon and Rick and Al Pacino and Glengarry Glen Ross, where you're talking about how you've closed Bruce and Harriet Nyborg. And then I say, great sale, Shell. Let's go around the corner and get some lunch.
It feels a little like that.
All right. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. In just a moment, we will get to Mr. Aaron Duran with the Week in Geek. He's got a couple of these stories. This is Don Taylor at the news desk.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Two suspects face multiple charges after North Carolina police said they left a note thanking the homeowners for the $5,000 worth of electronics gear and food they stole.
Well done.
you're struggling over there.
No, so. I'm putting printer in the putting paper in the printer.
Thanks. Fayetteville police spokesman Dan Grubb said Friday the pair left one note on a white paper napkin saying simply, thanks. Grubb said a second message etched onto a wall Wednesday morning said the same thing, and it added, we love the stuff we got. Police charged Dewan Marquise Avant and Daryl Sturdivant Jr. with breaking and entering.
Now, did they use the note to catch the guys? I mean, in other words, they didn't sound like their name or something. Like, sincerely, Daryl.
I'm really not sure how they caught them, honestly. They're 19 years old, so I don't think catching them was very difficult. But, yeah, they left it out saying, writing on the wall, we love the stuff we got. They're both 19. They're both from Fayetteville. The homeowners told the Fayetteville Observer that the stolen loot included a box of corn dogs, frozen chicken, and beer.
Who takes the time? I mean, okay, fine, whatever. It just seems like if you're robbing the home, you could probably steal a sufficient amount of consumer goods that you could get your own corn dogs, maybe, kids, at some point. I mean, they are criminals, but all right. Let's do one more here, and then we will speak with Mr. Aaron Duran.
Okay, some children went trick-or-treating in York County, Pennsylvania, Thursday night and found a dead body. The children were going door-to-door in the Conewago Valley Mobile Home Park in Newbury Township when they found a 68-year-old man who had shot himself outside his front door.
He's not filled with candy, you kids.
The body wasn't noticed until after 6 p.m. Thursday, after trick-or-treating began. Police said it's possible some people thought the body was a Halloween decoration.
Really, I'm not advocating that you kill people and dump bodies, but if you were to do that, I would say fall, winter, and especially Halloween, that's probably your best time to do it, because you're going to get yourself a 2-3-day head start before they notice that anything is sort of amiss.
Well, the police chief said that once the children found the body, they alerted neighbors who called police. He said, our primary goal was first to protect public safety, to make sure no more children were exposed to it, and we tried to limit the exposure of the neighborhood as well. Police said the man who lived in the mobile home was very ill, lived alone, and did not want to go to a hospital or nursing home.
Well, all right then. You were listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Still to come, we got your Clown Watch, Taser Watch, Geek Watch on the way. We'll talk Walking Dead, Eastbound and Down, and all that. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. From geekinthecity.com, Mr. Aaron Duran with the Week in Geek. Hello, sir. How are you?
Hello. How's it going?
I see. You're clever. You're Skyping in today.
Is Skyping better than the crackly cell phone?
Here's the thing about the Skype. Somebody actually sent me an email about this. Let's see if I've actually got this in front of me. Somebody was sending me an email about, you know, one of those emails that I get at like 3, 4 in the morning where I suspect that the person has been up all night just storing hallucinogens in their brain. But it was about technology.
Wait, and your audience doing that? No.
But he just said something. He said something to the effect that how bizarre it is that you know, we get the guy from you know, the guy from London or Switzerland or whatever, the Ryan, who Skypes us literally from Europe, and it just sounds like he's standing in the room with us. And then on Friday, you actually called us from 10 feet away. You were downstairs in front of the door, and you're calling us, and it just sounds like you're inside a coffee can that's being rolled down a hill covered in marbles.
Oh, yeah. No, that cell phone call was – I mean, it doesn't help that in that industrial area, you're just surrounded by power lines that are probably, you know, melting my brain and, by the way, scrambling cell phone signals.
Well, I suppose that's true. Sure. So how was your weekend?
It was fantastic. It was busy. I always take extra time off during Halloween. And it used to be back in the day when the dark days when I worked at Walmart, I used to put down that it was a religious holiday for me and no one would dare argue.
just for you and your pantheist Wiccan brethren.
That's right, for all my pagan D&D brothers out there. Yeah,
you know, if you go to your house is not unlike Dawn's house, where it's like for you and Jen, sort of an everyday is Halloween kind of a vibe at your place. So what did you end up doing last night?
Last night, Jen and I, it's become a yearly tradition. We volunteer at haunted houses. So this year we went out to Frighttown and over with Baron Mangulo, mm-hmm. and we volunteered in the Museum of Horrors, which was fantastic.
Yeah, that really. Now, when you say you were volunteering, what were you? Were you on like whiz duty or something?
No. Jen was a swamp zombie. She got to roll around in the mud.
That's awesome.
And I got to play this demented Muppet from hell. They glued about 5 different eye sockets to my head, and then painted my entire body blue, and then put on this really bizarre chest plate that made it look like I had multiple quades just coming out of my chest.
Okay, then. Are there photos
good
of this? Are photos viewable?
Yeah, there are some photos, yeah. I got to find them. But yeah, people did take some snaps and photos and stuff.
Hey, by the way, just I got a couple of things to say here. And I was going to read this later, but I might as well roll it in now because it has to do with films and film geekery. So a couple weeks ago, we were talking about Rhonda Shear, who, along with Gilbert Gottfried, they split the hosting duties on USA's what, Don?
Up All Night.
Up All Night, I believe is the inflection you were looking for there. So this guy says, this is actually from Tony who dropped off, the candy corn on Friday. The subject line is, about Rhonda Shear and Dawn's boobs. Really? Did you just belch using digital technology over the virtual airwaves into the ears of our audience?
It was a loud chortle.
Okay, just checking. Not that I would be opposed. I'm just saying. I wanted to make sure. I wanted to see if we had actually transmitted our first digital oral flatulence here. But the email says, "Dude, I'm in the gym and I'm in the gym. I'm working out. One of the screens is playing Rhonda Shear doing an infomercial for some kind of magic bra." It's fantastic, he says. There are all these different women parading through that Rhonda Shear then fondles to show how their boobs are supported. I immediately thought of you, which isn't nearly as homoerotic as it might sound, by the way. And have you seen the magic bra commercial he's talking about, Don?
Yes, I have.
What is the nature of the bra?
It's kind of like Spanx for your boobs.
What?
Is that when you've been a bad girl?
Yeah,
I mean, it doesn't really look like it ought to be very supportive because it's very stretchy and stuff. But ostensibly, it's cantilevered in such a manner that it does offer support, even though it's some kind of soft.
What?
It cantilevered.
Is that a soap?
No.
What is cantilevered?
You know, like with bridges and with buildings.
No, I don't know. But what does it mean?
When you have something that's a weight that offsets a weight on an opposite side.
Balance?
Yeah.
Okay, it balances things.
Yes.
I'm not trying to be a jackass. I'm not familiar with the word. And, you know, that's not a thing that happens very often. So I like to learn a new word when I hear it.
Cantilever.
Cantilever is sort of a weight-based balance
right.
to things.
It's kind of your flying buttress.
By the way, can I just tell you that I don't know whether I'm more disappointed or happy that you, when you referred to it as being Spanx for your boobs, you did not say Spanx for the mammaries.
Oh.
Which was right there.
It was
sitting right there. Anyway, so he says, there are all these different women parading through and Rhonda Shear has to fondle them so you can see how their breasts are supported. I immediately thought of you. By the way, speaking of breasts, when we took that picture at the end of the candy corn segment on... Do you know what he's going
to
say?
No, but this is going to have something to do with my boobs, isn't it?
Yes.
All right.
I mean, yes.
Okay.
I haven't posted this photo yet, by the way, because we got the glowing eye thing, and it's not for my it's for my Mac. I actually have a thing that'll zap that and get rid of it, so I got to do that. But so speaking of breasts, when we took that picture at the end of the candy corn segment on Friday, Dawn was standing to my left. As we all got close to the picture, Dawn's boob was hitting my left arm. At that point, I started thinking, oh no. Now I'm going to make Dawn uncomfortable because she's going to think I'm trying to rub her chest business as we pose for this shot. Your chest business. Not just your actual boob, your whole chest business.
My chest business.
I immediately got awkward, he says, like some junior high schooler, just wanting the whole thing to end. Aaron then said, wait, let's get another shot. Now we squish even closer. More boob. More uncomfortable. Now cold sweats. After that, I walked to the break room to be confronted by Kenny in a giant flying pig outfit, Greg in a bald skull cap, and Sarah with a flaming red wig. Best day ever. There you go. So that is Tony from the candy corn visit. On,
I was only trying to support the chest business.
No, it's we're big fans of the chest business here. That's whether small or large, that's business worth supporting. Aaron, am I right?
That's right. It's a growth industry, sir.
That's right. All right. So what is happening in the week in Geek?
What's happening this week? First off, if people haven't made it out, they really need to check out every other Tuesday at Vendetta Bar, which is in North Portland, is the Geek Trivia Night, hosted by just a rotating cast of nerds and geeks. You really have to check it out. It's every other – so it's tomorrow night and then every other Tuesday night at Vendetta Bar. It starts at 7 p.m., but you want to get there at least an hour early because the place just fills up, just fills the capacity every single time. So that's something, if people haven't checked it out before, it's definitely a lot of fun. And even if you don't consider yourself kind of geek trivia inclined, just going for the show is worth the free admission to begin with, to watch geeks lose their mind when they think an answer is wrong.
See, and this is, and Dawn and I have talked about this, about whether because that's a thing from another world joint, and so we've kicked around the idea of maybe going and hosting or judging or what is.
Yeah, well, it's actually, I mean, things kind of got it started, but it's a whole Backspace and Ground Control, all the kind of geek businesses in town are all a part of it now, so it's really great.
So when somebody does, here's a question I have for you: when somebody is running one of those geek trivia nights, Do they do the judging, the question creating, the hosting, or some of that, or all of that?
They do all of it.
See, this, because you brought up the idea of us doing like a geek trivia thing. Because I can't participate. I can't play at trivia nights, even if I wanted
to. See, I want
to
see you just lose your mind when you think the answer is wrong.
No, see, you say that though. That's the thing. You say that, and Laura said that too, until she actually witnessed it. And then it happened one more time when Cheryl. There was a Wire trivia event a couple months back, where it was like Cheryl, Laura, our friend Elisa, and myself, all big Wire fans, and we go there and we're all like proud of ourselves because we've got the really niche team name. I think we called ourselves Fuzzy Dunlop, which is this like obscure reference from The Wire and whatever, and and we're just thinking that we're just like badasses. And first of all, we lost, so then it's like I couldn't, you could never perform as a man again after that. So I lost, and then
I wouldn't know.
I'm just thank you. And then at one point, there was this, like an answer I'd written down, and I forget what it even was. It was like the answer was like Rodney or something. So I'd written down Rodney, R-O-D-N-E-Y. And then the jackass table to my – God, mother effers, the table to my right where we swapped answers or whatever, they call the judge over because they think I've written down a G, like Rodney. Like anybody would ever write that. Like that's an answer to anything. And it wasn't. It was a D. It was clearly a D. And the guy said, I don't know. It looks more like a G to me. And it was – Laura actually had to grab me because I was standing up to stride over to ask the guy, like, what the hell his problem was. This is – I mean, this pales in comparison to the time. Don't even get me started on the time I went to a goddamn Kiss trivia contest and the guy had the answer wrong. The judge had the wrong answer. And it was, and then I took out my phone to get online to prove to him that the answer. And then there's a course of no phones from everybody in the bar, and I was trying to point out that I was just doing it to get the correct answer from the goddamn internet.
See, the thing that works though is if you can really argue it, eventually you'll have half the room on your side, and you can break the hosts and get them to like the one that elicited geek rage last time was I'll test your Empire Strikes Back skills.
See, I'm gonna fail at this, so don't okay. No, all right, fine. What
color is Bacta? the liquid that Luke was regenerating in after he had the Wampa attack?
Yellow.
No, it's clear.
Oh, fail.
Because you can see through it. But they had done some Wikipedia research and went on to that Expanded Universe crap and said it was pink. And you have never seen nerd rage between if Expanded Universe as defined by the Wikipedia counts as canon versus what you just see on the television screen.
Did you say Wikipedia?
Yeah, the Wikipedia. It's the Star Wars wiki.
Okay. Okay.
I did the geek trivia a couple of times with my husband, and the first time we did it, we were actually on a team with Fatboy Roberts. Second time I went, I was on a team with Aaron, and it's like, man, talk about people who like take it seriously. So damn seriously, and it had a terrible effect on my husband, because there was a point, the first one, he was, like, so outraged about what he saw as some kind of wrong in his answer about the names of all of the areas of the world of Conan or whatever it is. Like, what are all of the districts in the world of Conan?
Oh, right, yeah. Hyborian, Atlantis, and... Yeah.
And there was one that Patrick was going, that's not it! That's wrong! No, it's this! I swear it is! And I'm just
because here's the thing, and this is maybe more of a male thing than a female thing, but, I mean, when it comes to trivia, there are answers. There's just right and there's wrong. There are things that are just factually incorrect sometimes. By the way, I have to say for my cred here, even though I'm not like the biggest Empire guy, my first response was to say clear, but then I was thrown off by the fact that you said colors, so I assumed there must have been one. So then I was like a whole thing in my head. No, that was my thing with – here's the other thing, and I'm not trying to knock the trivia nights. People seem to have a great time, and let's be honest, everybody's like loaded anyway. I mean, you're like 9 sheets to the wind, and so that's part of the fun for everybody.
You have to go into it. It's fantastic.
But see, I'm always the guy who's sober, so it's a little bit less fun for me to compete because as serious as everybody else is taking it, I'm taking it way seriously, and by the way, I'm the only clear-headed person in the room who doesn't see this ad hoc elasticity to rules. Back to the goddamn Wire trivia night. So once I get past this jackass at the next table who thinks I've written down Rajni, which is a name that no one has anywhere in the world, much less in the Wire, we get past that, then there's this thing where the guy says, okay, I need the complete name of the corrupt senator from, like, season 3 or whatever. I need his complete name. And so somebody – and the answer is, by the way, Senator Clay Davis. His complete name is Clay Davis. And so somebody writes down Dave Davis. And so here's the thing. That's just wrong. That's not correct. But then the table bitches and moans about it. The judge goes, well, I guess I'll give you half credit. And that is when I just told Laura, I said, like, this is a clip joint. The fix is in. There is no winning here. This is not a world of men in which we are operating. So this is why I can no longer
go to trivia. You just lose your mind over a question.
But I've considered the idea of maybe running the trivia night, though, somewhere, just so it can be done properly for once. And so there will be no quarter given for incorrect answers.
I'll get you all the info to how to put your guys' name in the hat to start running one.
I tell you, though, between Aaron and the damn pirates, there are people there that, like, you know, they are serious rules lawyers.
Oh, yeah.
Let me tell you.
Oh, yeah. No, I got to tell you, there's nobody who knows the rules like a geek because, well, you know, they've all read the handbook. That's the thing. They've all gone online to the, like, International Bar Trivia Foundation website. And they've, you know, the annotated code is lodged in their head. I know you got, like, two more things to get to, but one final note about this. Here's the reason that I don't play trivia games with geeks, is because two Thanksgivings ago or something, a bunch of us had this like geek house at the coast. It was like
Is this the night you lost? I won.
Well, I'm not even sure what you're referencing as such. It's not like it's outside the realm of possibility. But a bunch of us, like Aaron and Jen and Jason and Ashley and Bobby and I think the Bobbies were both there and whatever. So we had like 2-3 days at the coast at this house over Thanksgiving. And everybody's drunk all the time and cooking and burning themselves on, you know, on 10 pounds of bacon they've just taken out of the stove. And it was a good time until somebody brought out that seen it. Game,
seen it.
Where it's like you put the thing up on the screen, and I don't even know what the nature of the dispute was. I just the one moment everybody was sitting on the couch chortling along, having a good time, and the next moment it was like Jason Crump and Bobby and Fatboy, they were just like nose to nose, and Jason had that thing where like the fist was coming back and cocking, you know, and so, there's, you know, somebody like leapt in between like Clint Eastwood blocking a Malkovich bullet, just like no, and had we actually had to turn it off. And I think
well, it's because when it comes to that geek stuff, we're all alpha razorback monkeys.
Yeah, and know? I mean, so I think Jen.
I
think Jen actually took the game and hid it. I think she put it like in the trunk of her car for the rest of the weekend. So I'm sorry. What else is going on in the Week in Geek apart from Geek Trivia?
Well, let me just throw – I'll just do one more story then since we're getting kind of long here. In addition to tomorrow, you know, being the big election, the other big thing that is happening tomorrow that not a lot of people know about is after years and years of it being threatened and shot down in various state courts and appellate courts, the Supreme Court is finally going to hear a case of California basically versus the video game industry to determine if some video games are considered inappropriate and will be illegal to sell to minors.
And would that be – that's just in California, obviously, but that would be a big precedent. So that is – they're going to –
No, it's going to be – no, federal Supreme Court.
So that
– it's actually going to, you know, the main court tomorrow.
So it's starting – so that case starts tomorrow.
Yeah.
Was there a particular video game that that prompted the case?
Not – well, I mean, the one that actually got the ball rolling that got the psychiatrist – I forgot his name's escaping now a few years ago – to, you know, kind of build up his evidence was Postal 2, which – really, apart from being just a bad game to begin with, is pretty heinous. The whole point of Postal 2 is to kill innocent people in the most graphic ways possible, and sometimes you can then whiz on them after you've blown their heads off.
the look of distaste on Don's face.
You know, it's an Uwe Boll game kind of thing. So
the look of palpable disdain for, let's be honest, men on Don's face just now was awesome. That really was worth hearing the whole whizzing thing
there. There's parts where you can stick a cat on an M16 and fire it across to make somebody else blow up.
Well, that's just funny, though. I mean, that's
it was fantastic.
That's just humor is what that is.
But what's really interesting is apart from the ACLU that are, of course, defending the case because they say that all video games are a First Amendment right, pretty much every other form of media is also backing the video game industry because they know if the video game industry loses this case, everyone else is next. Then it's fair game.
Well, and also the video game industry makes more than – I mean it's the biggest grossing electronic industry in America right now. They make more than the box office does. So
And what's going to be strange is it's not going to just be like anything with a mature rating. Much like you had always lamented in radio that you never knew what would get you in trouble until you got the fine.
Right.
That's how it's going to be with video games too. They will decide on a game by game basis.
Yeah.
So, for instance, like Call of Duty, the current Call of Duty would not be illegal to sell to a minor. That one, they're still fine with that. So, if the Supreme Court sides in favor of making certain games illegal for minors, it's going to be a nightmare.
All right. You can find out more about all of this at geekinthecity.com. That is geekinthecity.com. Ladies and gentlemen, Aaron Duran, thank you, my friend. Have a satisfying Monday.
Thank you very much.
All right. There you go. That's Aaron Duran, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Let's do this, actually, before we take a break. Let's close this out. Let's do the Geek Watch here in just a sec. We might as well just back-to-back it. Then we will take a break. We still got the Taser Watch to come, Clown Watch on the way, and we'll talk about some of the television last night. Here is your Geek Watch for Monday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
This high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember, you used to...
Just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but... Because we were wondering if the quantum flux... And just listen on
there. There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship. You got it?
Energize.
Here's your Geek Watch for Monday.
If you have ever lost your remote control in the couch cushions, you may soon find that there's an app for that. The New York Times reports that the remote control...
Is this a glimpse of my future? By the way, the show, are we going to hear a lot of iPhone-centric stories over the next week or two?
Yes.
Okay, I'm not complaining. I'm just asking.
This is just purely coincidental, actually, that I came across this morning. The New York Times reports that the remote control, once heralded as the latest and greatest in TV-watching technology, the first one was corded and called the Lazy Bones, and it was just for changing the volume.
By the way, that thing is fantastic. Have you ever seen it? I went to the... there's at the Museum of TV and Radio in Manhattan. They have the very first consumer available remote control. And it was called the Lazy Bones. There was another one that actually, this was pretty great. Here's the advanced remote control technology they had. The Lazy Bones just did the volume. The next step was a television that this was like the very nascent stages of the cordless remote, because I think the Lazy Bones actually had, it was like a cord. It was like the early VCR remote control that had like the big cable that went across the room.
Yeah.
Was that each corner of the television had a different electronic eye, one for on, one for off, one for up volume, one for down volume. And that was it, because they hadn't quite figured out how to put multiple functions into one electronic eye. But it is great that even then, and that was like 60 years ago, we had even fewer health, even less health care and fewer health advances then, but already the cream of scientific development and cerebral focus was going into how to keep fat Americans on their ass. So,
well, the remote may be on its way out. According to the New York Times, everybody realizes the remote control is the dinosaur of the consumer electronics industry. With cable, satellite, and the internet expanding viewing options exponentially, a few companies are making remotes that resemble space shuttle control panels, but others are jettisoning them in favor of smartphone apps that can do everything a remote does on an easy-to-use device that the consumer already owns.
It's weird that you bring this up, actually, because I was actually just lamenting that last week. I was saying, like, maybe lamenting is too – lamenting makes it sound like I'm a Christian martyr rending my garments and hitting myself in the head with a board. But I was just wondering, well, like, you know, the iPhone or the phone or whatever, you know, any smartphone is a thing in your hand that communicates with other things via invisible waves, which is all a remote control is. So I wonder why it didn't already exist. It seems like that ought to be a relatively simple thing to make.
Yeah. One company that makes internet-connected stereos offers a $350 touchscreen remote or a free iPhone app.
Let me think.
Mitsubishi, Samsung, and Apple and Google all offer remote apps with their TVs now. The apps allow users to personalize the configuration of their remotes. And best of all, when they get lost in the couch, all you have to do is call them.
Oh, that's fantastic. Awesome. There you go. There's your Geek Watch for Monday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
By Grabthar's hammer, by the sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
Next. Ooh, loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
All right, still to come, we have your Clown Watch, Taser Watch on the way, and we'll talk about TV last night as well.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
This isn't one of the. This isn't one of the beds we were playing last week. So is this? Oh, this is Girl from Ipanema. So this isn't the Lenny D bed for which you were looking.
No.
Because there was that for one golden moment we had it, and then it rotated back out, and I lost it again before I could figure out what it was.
And I was actually quite sure at the moment that you did that on purpose.
Just to keep
me guessing.
No, because I have them. I have them on a bank of sounds that rotates here. We'll do that before the day's over. You are listening to the. Did you just mouth the phrase "No, we won't"?
Yes, I did.
With a rueful, silent chuckle.
Yes, I did.
All right, we're doing it right now. Doing it right now at this very moment. I'm not even going to wait. And this is going to be brought to you by Castalia Language Center, by the way. Castalia Language Center, they are a Spanish language school located in downtown Portland. They offer Spanish language classes for adults. So if you are an adult who has, you have no experience and no actual history of learning Spanish and you want to start from scratch, then you couldn't find a better place to do it. But if you have Spanish education in your background, but you just don't feel like you ever learned to speak it conversationally, colloquially, maybe you took it in high school, maybe you took a year or two of it in college, maybe you feel like you don't have a strong grasp of it, or maybe it focused on, is this it?
No.
Maybe you feel like it focused on repetition, on rote memorization, on regurgitating a lot of Spanish words and phrases that you never really learned the context for. Well, then you have probably got a flawed sense of what it is like to actually learn a language in the right way. Castalia Language Center, they will find something that works with your schedule. They'll find something that works with your life, whether it's the day of the week, whether it's the time of day. And they're going to teach you in a way that works the best with the way you learn, with your learning method. And that's why Castalia caters to adults only. It's not teens. It's not kids, because your brain works a little bit differently as you age. And so you're going to find yourself in class with, first of all, no more than 7 other people, so maximum of 8 people in the class. And it's going to be tailored to the way that your brain actually operates. You're going to find yourself speaking conversational and colloquial Spanish and much faster than you thought possible. You find out more about it at PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com. PortlandSpanish.com. Castalia Language Center. They are a proud sponsor of this, the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Is it this?
No.
You sure?
Mm-hmm.
How about...
Actually, let me hear that previous one again.
This is Ahab the Arab.
No, that's not it.
All right. And again, you're sure it's not...
Yeah, it's not this.
This is like the Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade video game when you go to the trading booth. I need to buy a basket. How about, You know, Lenny D just died like 3-4 years ago. And he was performing up until the very end at Lenny's Place, which is in like, whatever, like Okeechobee, Florida or someplace.
Wow.
All right, how about... We're almost through the entirety of disc one here. I will find this this music bed that is vexing you if it's the last thing I do. You don't feel like it's this one?
No.
All right.
This is it.
Is it?
Yes.
You're sure?
Yes.
You're positive?
Yes.
You're sure it's not this one?
No. What was it?
This is the bed you seek.
Yes.
This is called 5 o'clock whistle. Now, here's the thing. This happened like, it now seems like it's been years ago that you even brought this up. Why was it so important that we find this bed?
Maybe actually this...
Oh, God.
This isn't
really?
The one.
Oh, come on.
Damn
you
it.
Just...
No, I just think this is it because I remember
this from...
You're
just effing with me now.
No, because I remember this from a cartoon.
So this isn't it?
No.
Christ almighty. All right.
No.
You'd be chasing around a bald man and hitting him with a stick. All right. This is not it. You know what this is? This is... Thank you for calling Mueller Funeral Homes in your time of loss. Someone will come to the phone as soon as possible. Well, that's the end of disc one, Don. I'm afraid we haven't... We'll have to move on to disc two tomorrow. Don't you worry. I've got 24 more of these that we can go through. You were listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Still to come. Taser Watch, Clown Watch, and more. You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Listening to the Emerson News Network. Emerson News Network.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Tiger Woods has dropped to number 2 in the world's golf rankings, replaced by England's Lee Westwood. Woods held the number 1 spot for a straight 281 weeks. David Dusek, deputy editor of golf.com, says he should return to number 1 as early as this week at the HSBC Champions in Shanghai.
The number 1 golfer in everyone's mind again, has that dominant position again. I don't think he's going to have that. I think that's gone for good. Can he win enough tournaments? Can he earn enough points to become the world's number 1? Absolutely.
I sometimes wonder about the career opportunities and business advancements that I've missed out upon because I don't golf, and because I just can't bring myself to pretend that I want to golf. You know what I mean? Like, I know an astonishing number of guys who golf. I mean, really, just an astounding number of men who do that as, you know, as an activity or as a pastime. And Some of them I can tell are really into it, and some of them do it just because that is because to some degree that is where the deals are made in this world. And I just can't swallow it. I just can't suck it up enough to just go like, hey, I'd love nothing more than to go hit the links. Sure thing, guy. It just because then you get to start wearing like a golf shirt with like an alligator on the boob. You know, and just like, and you know, and wearing like, you know, like $90 sunglasses and being a dick.
I can kind of see the appeal of it. I mean, intellectually. And Carl Hiaasen wrote a really good book about his obsession with golf. It's not something that, it's like skiing. I can see the appeal of skiing, but then it's just, it's
but
something
see, skiing,
that
at it, least, there's a visceral thrill to it. I mean, it's you against nature, and you're going, you know, it's cold, and it's fast, and there's the, you know, the yeah. risk of imminent death around every corner, and it's man's fascination with velocity. Golf, as somebody once said, is hitting a ball with a crooked stick and then walking after it, slowly.
I just, anytime that something involves a lot of expensive equipment and I have to go to like a special place to do it and be surrounded by douches, I end up not being interested.
Surrounded by douches, the Dawn Taylor story.
The Supreme Court is refusing to take up a constitutional challenge to provisions of the Patriot Act from Oregon lawyer Brandon Mayfield, who was once wrongly suspected in deadly terrorist bombings in Spain. The justices on Monday, that
the
was
what?
Today, the justices
okay.
today turned down an appeal from Mayfield, who was arrested by federal agents after they
the justices jettison things?
So, apparently J words okay. are difficult for me. All I don't know why.
In Jalalabad?
Yes. Mayfield was arrested by federal agents after they mistakenly matched him to a fingerprint from the train bombings in Madrid in 2004.
Oh, so sorry.
It turned out the fingerprint didn't belong to him, and he got an apology and $2 million from the federal government, but a federal appeals court blocked his challenge to the Patriot Act, the post-9/11 law that was used to arrest him. The high court left the appeals court ruling in place. Mayfield never got back all the information that was secretly taken and recorded from his house and his law office during the federal investigation. The government had argued that the Patriot Act allowed the government to keep those files secret. Mayfield's lawyer, Eldon Rosenthal, had argued on appeal that a husband's discussions with his wife in the bedroom with the door closed, a lawyer's conversation with his client, a priest's conversations with the penitent, those items are none of the government's business. The American military may have miffed its Anglophone allies. They've miffed them.
They've miffed their Anglophone allies.
Yes, their Anglophone allies. Over security preparations for the 2012 Olympic Games in London. According to the Daily Mail, the U.S. offered to park a 40,000-ton amphibious assault ship on the Thames to help defend the skies over London and eavesdrop on terrorist chatter. But the mother country, having just slashed its defense budget and eliminated one of its carriers and a fighter jet program, is a bit sensitive about that sort of thing and said that the Defense Department put it up the chain and word came straight back, no thanks, we don't need the help. According to the Daily Mail, we haven't made any final decisions yet, the Department Defense said. There are a lot of options available, including special forces, but we are certainly capable of protecting ourselves.
You've got this thing going on today where it's like you're reading the stories as though they're coming across a really fast-moving and somewhat blurry stock ticker from the NYSE.
I think I spent too much time staring at the iPhone this weekend. My brain is just not firing correctly.
I was actually going to ask if it would be easier to read these if they were in 5-point type on a shiny, glowing rectangle.
That is possible.
Okay.
If I could pet it.
Say this.
If I could pet them and they just like slide effortlessly from top to bottom.
Would you like, have just like a like a stiff belt of booze or something over there. Or how about this? Say he thrusts his fist against the post and still insists he sees the ghosts.
I can't.
Okay. You're listening to the Rick. You look like you were really going to cry for a second there when you said you can't. It looked for all the world like you were just going to dissolve into a puddle of tears.
And that makes you laugh.
Yes. Yes, it does.
The idea that I might cry just makes you laugh.
Well, and kind of turned on at the same time, but mostly the laughing part. This is really apropos of nothing, but I was just looking around the studio here, and my eyes fell upon the steel jack-o'-lantern that we've got, which I think we should just leave, by the way. I think we should leave it here and just see if anybody says anything about it. You know, because I kind of, A, it's cool looking. B, every moment that jack-o'-lantern is there, that is time that space on that side of the table won't be taken up with, like, you know, like rubber ducks that look like meatloaf or whatever.
Empty whiskey bottles and vuvuzelas.
or that, sure. Yeah. Because you guys live in the suburbs and in an apartment complex. Do you get trick-or-treaters at your place?
We got one last night. It was sad because
depressing.
We assumed we wouldn't get any, so we didn't have any candy.
Would you like some Mrs. Dash?
And then we get this knock at the door and we're like, what? What do you want? I'm like, oh, we're sorry, child.
What was the child dressed as?
I don't know. Patrick went to the door. I didn't go. But I heard him say, I'm sorry, we don't have any candy. And I heard this little girl go, oh, thanks, okay.
That seems like a lie as well, that you would not have candy at your place. I mean, no. You're a candy maker.
I don't have any. Well, I could have broken off a hunk of a piece of, like, milk chocolate off of a 10-pound block.
Who wants baker's chocolate?
Here's a big fistful-sized hunk of chocolate just thrown into your bag.
Again, back to the Seamus thing, I got this long email from the friend of Seamus who said that, because I think he moved into a house, I don't know if it's actually in the suburbs, but, you know, for a long time he lived basically in, like, this cabin. He was sort of like this Unabomber guy, just sort of sat on a huge beanbag, you know, like writing Sun Microsystem code and being talked to by no one. And for the longest time, I tried to mail him a few things, and it was one of those things of Seamus where you had to either send it, like, literally, like, general delivery, like Denver, Colorado, where it just, like, went to the general store or something, and when he came by to pick up grass feed, he would just get it. Or you had to FedEx it because he didn't have a deliverable mailing address, because he was just, like, off at, like, living at the foot of a mountain or something.
Wow.
But so he's got, like, the house, like, in an actual residential neighborhood. And so he said he just went bonkers this year. He went to the store and just bought, like, 50 pounds of candy and every decoration he could possibly find, and just spent hours and hours, like, stringing up lights and hooking up things out front and things that glow and things that go woo in the window and the whatever, which I did the first year that we moved into our neighborhood, where I had the big glowing pumpkin on top of the house, and I had, like, orange and purple flickering lights in the windows, and I had a thing in the like, a ghost thing that, like, fluttered in front of one of the other windows, and I actually rigged up speakers in the garden that played, the haunting sounds of clanking chains and so forth. And then I got the huge bowl of candy by the door, and then I just sat there waiting for knocks at the door that would never come.
Aww.
The only person, I swear to God, the only person who knocked at the door was the neighbor from across the street asking if we'd had any trick-or-treaters, because she decorated and nobody'd come by. And I was just so depressed.
Aww.
And so the next year, this is what a retard I am, and I don't even like people, but the next year I made a point whenever I saw my neighbors to say, as we were getting close to Halloween, saying, like, hey, you guys going to decorate this year, trick-or-treating, the whole thing? And they went, well, I said, come on, you got to do it. If we all, you know, if the street looks active and alive for Halloween, then there will be trick-or-treating. Because here's the thing about the trick-or-treating is, it's like, you know, trick-or-treating is, Halloween is the one night of the year when E.T. can go outside and nobody will look at him weirdly, you know, or the man without a face, for example.
Yeah.
You can leave the home and nobody will look askance. Trick-or-treating is the one day out of the year when I will actively try to get children to come to my home and to speak to me and to pay attention to me. After that, I turn back into a child-hating pumpkin. But that's the one day of the year. And so the neighbors and I, they didn't all do it, but a lot of them, you know, they put up lights, or they put up something indicative of the fact that there was candy to be. I mean, and come on, it's a neighborhood of dirtbags. They're offering free candy. If nothing else, it's going to help mom get over her heroin detox.
Yeah,
so,
right.
You know, better than going to the plaid pantry and just stealing pounds of sugar packets. So we're giving out free stuff. All you got to do is come by and, like, knock at the door. The costume really is even optional. You just come by and say the code. We give you the thing. And so there, nothing. So now I'm just, so I've just given up. So I decorated inside. Here's the thing. I decorated this year, but none of the decorations can be seen from outside the home, because they don't deserve my holiday festivities. The only thing you can see from the street is you can see a slight purplish glow in one of my windows, and I have my cast iron owl out front. That's it. Everything else that's inside where it can be appreciated by me, Rick Emerson, a man who loves Halloween.
We had being a homeowner for 10 years, and then Patrick and I, we had a period where every year, the day after Halloween, we would go to like the Halloween store and we would buy crap half off for the next year. And we got to this point where we actually ended up going a little too far because we had, you know, things and stuff and pumpkins and things. And I had this demon. I ended up later selling him at a garage sale, but I had this demon. He was one of those full, like, full human-sized from the waist up. Big, red, scary demon guys. And I had a really big mailbox, one of those big locking mailboxes by my front door. And I put him on top of there, and it looked like he was rising up out of the top of there. The thing I hadn't really thought about was that he was right next to the front door, which meant that when small children would come to the door, there was this huge, really scary demon thing looming over them with his hands outstretched.
Awesome.
And it's like, and so I actually felt
bad.
Genuinely frightened a few children and then felt kind of bad. Now we live in an apartment complex, get no trick-or-treaters, so last night we...
I would think the parents would bring them around inside the complex, though, because they're you know, because you got to be afraid of everything, and so you let's stay here and not leave the house.
You think no parents take their kids to, like, actual house neighborhoods where they know there will be houses and food. So we just we built a fire in the fireplace, and we watched The Walking Dead, and we ate Chinese food.
Awesome. We'll talk about Walking Dead coming up here in a few. Also, Eastbound and Down. Let me just take a moment to tell you this about wiring your house for Halloween. And then, goddamn, you want to talk about a wiring dilemma. That is Christmas coming up. Because, I mean, you move right from, if you're me, like, I'm going to leave normally, as soon as Halloween is over, I go right to Christmas. I mean, I got my Christmas up like October 3rd, but I'm going to wait until Lara gets back, November 3rd, I'm going to wait until she gets back into town, and I'll take all the stuff down, and then we'll decorate together, because we got this whole, like, you probably, did you decorate for Christmas?
Yeah.
Okay, so you got a whole ritual, probably, that you
I got the whole box full of ornaments that we've been slowly, you know, putting together over the years, and yeah, various things.
Here's the thing that would sell if you could figure out a non-morbid way to do it. It would be already old Christmas ornaments from dead people. But see, then it's creepy because they're dead. But it's like, but nobody likes brand new Christmas ornaments you just got at like Kmart. You know, but anything, if it's old enough, you know, becomes kind of cool. Doesn't matter if it's just like a dollar, if it's like Woolworth's crap from 1970. By dint of being old, it therefore is sort of romantic. So if there was a way to buy authentically old Christmas ornaments that didn't just like, you know, that didn't just come from an estate sale or something. But anyway, so I get this whole the whole ritual about it, where we have the decorations, we make the, you know, the food and the whether it's like cider or, you know, Lara has the wine or the whatever. I got this whole by this Christmas decorating mix that I put together. This sort of, it used to be like a CD, but now it's just sort of a playlist where I put together, where it's half Sinatra and then half this sort of like really like this like down tempo electronic Christmas music, and it segues, and I've carefully the tempo and the mixing of one track to another. It's a whole night of it. All of which will be ruined, by the way. Well, here's the thing. You no longer have to worry about that jazz where you have to go through and check each bulb individually because there's like one bulb, which always just resulted in my dad angrily smashing every one of them under the heel of his boot and then throwing them all away, and then having to go to the store down the street looking for like a Rite Aid or something that's open. But if you plug everything in, and you know that everybody on your block, by the way, is plugging in all the Christmas lights at the same time, you're all going to pick exactly the same second to go, let's see what the house looks like now that I have 900 kilowatts of electric... And then you just hear a substation blowing up somewhere down by the river. So you don't want to contribute to that. It may still happen. Look, let's be honest. There's really nothing you can do about your neighbors and their sort of casual attitude towards jewels and the flowing of shame into your house. But you don't want it to be your fault. So you contact Squires Electric at 503-252-1609. That is 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. They are fully licensed, bonded, and insured electrical contractors. They can give you free estimates. No job too small, no job too large. And here's the thing, especially if it is your first Christmas in your house. It's like if you moved into a place, you know, you didn't live there last year, especially if it's a house that was built, I mean, not even 100 years ago. If you live in a house that was built more than 20 years ago, you probably want to have somebody take a look at it because it was built before everything, you know, hooked to the internet, before you had computers in every home, before all of your electronic appliances had to hook into like a USB port so they could uplink to Skylab or something and find out what time it was so it knew when to turn on the crisping drawer or something. You want to make sure that your house is going to be up to speed, up to snuff, and all of that for when you get ready to decorate for Christmas. So you contact Squires Electric. They've been in Portland for 12 years. And again, free estimates, and they do everything from one socket to an entire building. 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. That is Squires Electric. Once again, this is Don Taylor at the news desk.
Let's do our Taser Watch.
Fantastic. Here is your... Oh, my God. Whenever Joe Squires actually is in the studio, we kept trying to get him in a couple weeks ago, and then he was gone because he had a thing and building a condo. Then he was gone to the Ducks game. When we get him in, he should totally be the one to answer our Taser questions. I bet he could.
I bet he does. I bet he knows that thing.
Awesome. All right. Here's your Taser. I look forward to that day with just such rapt anticipation you can't even imagine it.
He may even have one.
I bet he probably... Well, you know, Sarah has one. She doesn't have... I guess she has a stun gun. So if he doesn't, I'm saying... We could arm him with one.
Mm.
All right. Here is your Taser Watch for Monday. You got me running, going out of my mind.
I can do it, bro!
You got me thinking that I'm wasting my time.
Don't chase me, bro!
Is Don Taylor with your Taser Watch.
Now, I will preface this by saying this is, in its way, both a Taser Watch and a penis watch.
Awesome.
So it's kind of a combination.
Okay.
Two Florida firefighters have resigned, and another had to be restrained and shot with a stun gun.
I'm sorry, they were firefighters where?
Florida. After an investigation showed that they were playing a game of exposing themselves. High Springs, Florida police were alerted to the situation when a firefighter reported on October 1st that after he awoke from a nap at the fire station, he found a photo on his laptop computer.
Oh, God.
That photo showed another firefighter exposing himself as he stood over and close to the sleeping man. Firefighter Michael Steele, 28, fessed up and admitted to standing over the sleeping man and exposing himself, while firefighter Kyle Lewis, 26, took a photo with a camera phone. In his interview with police, Lewis said the victim actually pulled a similar prank on Steele months ago, waking Steele up in the process. Steele told police he never remembers being awakened by such a prank and only learned of the alleged prank the next day.
Okay, so let me understand this. It was the penis. So he sees the photo on his desktop, you know, on his computer. He opens it, and then it's the guy, another one with his pants down. And is there an activity, or just a posing?
It just says exposing himself. So I believe, I would imagine he has unzipped himself and probably knowing men, he's probably holding his junk in his hand over the guy's face.
So it's like still life with Woodpecker, but not quite.
Yes.
Okay.
When the victim learned of the accusation against him during his interview with police, he got angry and left the interview room looking for Steele and Lewis. An officer said he tried to stop the victim, but the victim actually carried the officer through the lobby and out the front door. The police chief and the fire chief came to the aid of the officer, who eventually got his taser out and aimed it at the distraught victim.
Well, I would imagine so.
During the police department's investigation...
Sorry about that.
Officers also learned of yet another incident that allegedly occurred 4 to 5 months ago. Lewis and another firefighter were wrestling with one another in the fire station's kitchen, and the wrestling got to the point where Lewis had the other firefighter pinned to the ground. Lewis then exposed himself to the other firefighter while Steele filmed the incident.
Well, wait a minute. So, there's so much about this story that A, doesn't make any sense, but B, makes perfect sense, because it just sort of flows into what I assume is true with many of these occupations that involve, you know, a lot of time spent in close company with other men. I don't understand. It's sort of impressive, but also puzzling that he's wrestling with the guy. And I mean, that's just what men play, grab ass and roughhouse, yeah, apparently. But that he's got them pinned. And then exposes himself. So was he wrestling and he was already nude? Because how do you keep a guy pinned, especially another firefighter who's probably a strong guy, while then also getting out your penis?
Well, he says he was inspired. There was a movie, I just mentioned this last week, this movie Waiting with Ryan Reynolds.
Right.
In which some of the characters play a game in which they basically expose themselves. So the idea is to surprise the other person by... having that they have to look at your exposed penis, like, hey, dude, look, hey, you know, and so
it's like
I guess
bombing with your junk,
yeah,
yeah,
and I guess the guy found that like really hilarious and has been doing it to other firefighters.
I'm just curious about whether he took his pants off or whether he had gotten his tackle ready before the wrestling,
and he had the guy pinned.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
See, but how do you pin the guy? Because you still need the free one hand to go down and undo your business. Unless the guy who was maybe it was like where he had him pinned. He's like, okay, I got him pinned. Can you reach down and just, the flap. All right, now just pull it out. Now aim, and then the guy stepped back. So he had to position. It's like when you have to step in. It's like when the family's getting their picture taken at Steers and somebody has to step in and fix mom's hair before he can then go back and take the photo. So, or something like that.
Yeah,
okay. I don't even know if that's like half penis and half. There you go. It's I don't even know how to do that. All right.
I can do it.
Wow. Very puzzling, yes.
Did you want to do the... If you don't want to do the top five till tomorrow, I do have an email from a listener that I'd like to share with you.
Are you saying we can't do both, Don Taylor?
I have a feeling this might lead to some lengthy conversation, but...
Is this related to television last night?
No, we were going to talk about television. Let's talk about... I'll save the
email
till tomorrow morning.
Will that email hold?
I will save it till tomorrow morning.
All right, okay. Well, so let's do... we have our clown watch, yes?
We can save the clown watch.
Are you sure?
Yes.
All right. Let's do it, though. Let's get the clown watch done, and then we'll go to TV from last night, and then we'll kind of see where we are at that point. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. By the way, don't forget, as soon as this program is done, we'll have an encore of today's Legion of News, followed by an encore of this very fine radio show. And real quickly, just as a little bit of the prefiguring of the Walking Dead discussion, somebody asked me if AZ is available in the archives. It is. We did a marathon of that all day yesterday and Halloween. Those episodes are available for download in the Rick Emerson Show archives, and also the AZ retrospective that we recorded the interview with Aaron Duran and Jason Crump. That is available there as well. Here is Don Taylor with your clown watch for Monday. Not a lot of clowns this year, from what I saw on Halloween. I mean, not scary clowns, not happy clowns, not jocular clowns, not menacing clowns. There are really no clowns of any type. It's sort of almost, it's almost like the idea, maybe it's just too obvious or it just doesn't occur to people. Or maybe clowns are a thing you see so often during the rest of the year that it just doesn't register with people that it could be a Halloween costume. Huh. So I every year I expect to see like a Pennywise, a Pogo. But I got nothing. So it falls to me to be Pogo next year. I'm calling it right now. Dibs right there.
In Stockton, California, two clowns are fighting over territory. Peanuts, a balloon-twisting regular, has staked a claim to Janet Lee Plaza outside the multiplex long ago. He claims rival clown Nemo has illegally stuck his nose in. He's always on, quote-unquote, my turf, says Peanuts. He actually said, quote, unquote, by the way.
Is this a Peanuts watch?
Setting up right next to me and doing really shoddy work. Counters Nemo loftily. This is a public space. When you have public space, it is free for all the public to use. Peanuts' real name is Brandon Stewart. Stewart, 40, boasts that he has brought a high level of professionalism and merriment to Janet Lee Plaza. I'm not your average balloon guy, Stewart says.
Uh-huh.
I do balloon animals. Balloon sculpture. He adds, when I say balloon animals, people think about a puppy dog or a sword. No, I take it to the next level. A big Elmo, tall bunny, a Tasmanian devil, Tweety Bird, balloon artistry.
Did he really say any of these things loftily, do you suppose?
Yes, he did. He said it loftily. About his rival Nemo, he says, he doesn't dress up. He doesn't take a shower. He's just out there in my way. Peanuts hands out business cards on the plaza, which translate into jobs at parties and corporate gigs, and believes that Nemo is cutting in on his trade. Peanuts reported Nemo for performing without a permit, and Nemo's street performer permit was revoked on April 7th.
Wait, which one is it that doesn't dress up?
Nemo.
How is he a clown, as opposed to just being some guy?
I don't.
Does he just call himself a clown? Is he sort of an undercover clown? He's a street clothes clown?
That I'm really not sure. Peanuts may just be offended by the lack of clownishness.
There's some sour grapes
of his outfit
going on. All right.
Nemo's street performer permit was revoked because of improper solicitation of donations. The regulations say performers may set out a hat, but they may not ask people for money. Nemo was asked to leave the plaza, and Seward approves of this. He says, I think the people of Stockton deserve a better class of balloon artistry. The reporter for the Stockton Record got a hold of Nemo, whose name was Daniel Rapoyla, who immediately demanded to know, how did you get my number? And said that, you know, he didn't believe he was actually a newspaper reporter. And he acknowledged, I'm not an official clown. I just started with street performing. I haven't gone to clown school or anything. When he was told that Peanuts really, really hated him, he said, I want you to know I'm very disturbed by that. I think I better go before... I apologize. I got to go. And he hung up. He said, of course, later that he was going to fight for his right to use the public square and stand up for his rights.
This is just... I feel like I'm listening to a deposition here in a case that really is so perplexing to me. But they're both in Janet Lee Square?
Yeah, it's called Janet Lee Plaza.
It's in front of...
By a multiplex.
In Los Angeles.
In Stockton,
In
California.
Stockton. Where is Stockton?
I think it's near Sacramento.
Okay.
But anyway,
strange world.
After getting him kicked out of the plaza, Nemo may be mounting a counteroffensive. And the executive director of the Downtown Stockton Alliance says that evidently the ACLU is getting involved.
Oh, see, that's so much. When you said he was mounting a counteroffensive, I was just imagining him in a shed, like looking at a wall of guns and trying to figure out exactly which caliber was going to be appropriate for the task.
So, yeah, I got the story, and then I realized after that it wasn't really set up for me to share in as concise a
you know what would be great? I'm just picturing a clown drive-by where it's like it's a sort of, you know, like it's a little Volkswagen, again, sort of a kind of a thing going by. But then as it gets you, like an absurd amount of guns just suddenly come out of the side of the car. You know what I mean?
Or if he just has like a popcorn gun or a cotton candy gun like in Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
I think we ought to get a clown as a mascot of the Emerson News Network and then send him out to terrify the townspeople.
Okay.
Not even for Halloween. Just, you know, because.
I don't have to ever be around him, do I?
You could be the clown. You could be the clown, and it could be a way to embrace your fears, to get inside that which terrifies you and consume it, Dawn. Mm. All right, there's your clown watch for Monday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Really, fantastic. I just wanted to hear the clown watch song, I think.
Everybody does. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. This is Don Taylor.
After a hearty breakfast from a restaurant in his hometown of Chicago, President Barack Obama headed to Cleveland, Ohio to rally supporters on Sunday. It's a sprint to the finish. Election day is tomorrow. Mr. Obama appealed to the middle class while criticizing Republicans.
Between 2001 and 2009, the average middle class family saw their incomes across the country go down by 5%. When the other side was in charge.
This isn't nearly as exciting as when he was ordering breakfast earlier.
Good to see you.
Thank you for looking after us.
That's right.
Okay.
You got it, Abby.
Barbara, did you vote? Did you vote?
I voted for all of y'all.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
What do you know? I know it's Chicago, but what do you suppose she meant by I voted for all of y'all?
Five times. Awesome. Obama says voters have a chance to set the course for the nation.
You can defy the conventional wisdom. The kind of conventional wisdom,
kinda.
The stale wisdom that says you can't overcome cynicism in our politics, that says no, you can't overcome all the special interests and all the special interest money, that says no, you can't tackle the biggest challenges in this country.
Yes, he told them that they could, once again, defy conventional wisdom.
In 2 days, you have the chance to set the direction of this country and this state for many years to come.
Good to see you.
Thank you for looking after us.
That's right.
Okay.
You got it, Abby.
Barbara, did you vote? Did you vote?
I voted for all of y'all.
That's fantastic.
Where's my dinner?
Was that actually
yeah,
a
that was
separate
later,
cut
that
altogether?
Was, no, that was later in that one.
I gotta wait on the train. Come on.
Yourself. That's the thing. How about you?
Y'all get my pitch in.
I don't even know what's going on in that one.
No, it was like later in the all y'all one. Later, he asked, "Where's my dinner?
Did you vote?
I voted for all of y'all.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So the stuff, where my dinner?
We got so awesome. I wish that he would just. I wish he could work that phrase into the State of the Union. You know, like just when he makes some particularly salient point about international political brinksmanship, and then just say, "Where are my people?" And then just, you know, everybody kind of.
Where are his bitches?
Where are his bitches, I ask you. You got there the same time I did. Mr. Obama, I have merely one question from the great state of Maryland, and that is, where is your bitches, sir? At the convention, they should totally do that. Like when they do the delegates from every state, and then the guy, you know, or Obama could open it up by saying, where's my bitches? And then the guy says, we, the great state of Maryland, and our 13 electoral vote is your bitches, sir. But, you know, with more panache than I exhibited right there. Here's the third great idea I've had today. I don't remember what the second one was, but the first one was the idea of the iPhone app that lets you pet the thing and then it purrs like a cat.
Yeah.
You know what Obama should totally do? This is why I don't want to run for office. I don't want to, you know, like I don't want to have to campaign. Like you always hear about those guys who are like, they're like, oh, I love the campaigning and the talking to the people, but the governing sucks. You know, the job sucks, but they love the thrill of being out there and fighting for the office. You know, and some people are the opposite. They say, well, look, I want to govern. I hate the showmanship you have to do or whatever. My whole thing is like, I am like the chick who, no, I'm not like that. I am the opposite of the chick who doesn't want to be married. She wants a wedding. Because I don't want to run, I don't want to campaign, I just want to be in office for like 3 months just so I could screw with things. Because I have so many fantastic ideas that I would implement just because I want to see them happen. Like that thing they do in Britain where the prime minister gets on TV and they can like pelt him with booze and, you know, not actually drinking booze, but you know, like they can boo him. You know what Obama should totally do is when he speaks to the State of the Union, he should seed the crowd with some of the sort of like the gospel call and response, you know, the sort of that, you tell it, you know? How great would that be?
That would be great.
And just sort of, you know, and you would just have them, you know, you just sort of have them sitting there just looking like everybody else, just sort of, you know, like looking down the studio, like taking notes or like with the little, like the UN translator thing in their ear or maybe just, you know, like nodding sagely. And then you put them all in like blue blazer, red tie, so they just blend in with all the other lameness. And then whenever he makes some point, you just have like five or six people in different pockets just sort of a, go on! And just sort of a, how great would that be? Just and then in my mind, see, because in my head it's like an ongoing Family Guy episode all the time. Then it just jump cuts to houses across America as people are sort of squinting their eyes a little bit at the television. And Gladys, there's something really weird is going on in the State of the Union. I don't understand it. And just, you know, and then Obama could just sort of high five some folks on his way out. How great would that be?
That would be awesome.
Where are my people?
That'd be so much better.
Delaware.
And he could just end every speech by saying, "Where my dinner?" Could be just like his catchphrase.
Come on! You say that like it wouldn't resonate with America. Like that isn't something straight out of, like, what's his name? Alonzo Camacho, the guy from Idiocracy. He could totally end, you know, the president. What is his name in Idiocracy? It's like five names, right? But the guy in Idiocracy, the professional wrestler, he could totally end with, you know, and I say to you now, where's my dinner? And then everybody holds up signs, you know, dinner! Like, for no reason. Where my dinner? Sort of like Furious Styles as president. That's awesome. God, I wish I was President Obama. I could talk, but not for any real reason. See, that's why they don't elect me, because I don't want it to be for anything good. I just want it to be so I can end the State of the Union with where's my dinner?
Yeah, we don't have time to talk about TV now.
We do.
Really?
Do you have somewhere to be?
Well, no, but don't we have Greg and Sarah coming?
Yeah, we got time. It's not even three. Yeah, I mean, I think the deal is that they get in here by 3:30. I think that's the. Now I don't know. We should clarify that.
Yeah, we should, because it was supposed to be 3, and then we just kept like dragging later.
Yeah, but
later,
I don't think.
Later.
Look, let's be honest. They don't reason. Sarah worked with me for like 10 years. She doesn't reasonably, honestly, rationally expect me to be done like quote on time. I mean, please, come on. Where you head? See, and I just want to do everything now. I want to do everything as that woman.
Where my dinner?
And that. Oh, I wish I could get – I got to get some applause. So whenever we roll that out, we have the appropriate – you know, it's like when you said – it's like when you said, you know, like the hey, teach catchphrase or something.
Yeah.
And then we can sort of – all I've got now is this, and that doesn't really work. And so forth. I have no way to work the where my dinner thing into – I'm going to make a shirt that says, wear my dinner, and just have it on. And just see if I can start a catchphrase like, from nothing.
Well, we can offer them on the Emerson website.
Can I just, speaking of the Emerson website, can I just tell you that here's why the audience is fantastic. I'm talking about best audience ever. Somebody actually says, this was posted yesterday on Facebook in response to my story about the guy going, where's your bitches? This guy actually says, Douglas in Facebook says, I vote we replace best show ever with where's your bitches. That's so great. Well, in any event, the Rick Emerson radio program today and all days brought to you by a series of fine business partners, up to and including CJ's High Climbing Services. And as Don noted very correctly in Legion of News today, it's not just high climbing stuff. You know, it's, you think to yourself, well, look, I live in a house that's, it's either, like maybe an apartment building, or you live in a condo, or you have, a house where the roof is already taken care of, or
maybe you live underground.
Maybe you live in a hobbit hole, sure. Possibly, maybe you're a mole person. Maybe your owner abandoned you when you were small and cute, and now you and your lidless white eyes just hide underneath the ground waiting for passersby like a thing. You're probably not that. I mean, if you are and you're using the radio or a computer or a phone, that's kind of unnerving, if impressive. Anyway, 503-228-9278 is the phone number for CJ's High Climbing Services. But, if you get whether it's just a collection of leaves and muck and just clippings and things from the yard, and it's like you got a garden in your front lawn or garden in your front, the front yard or your backyard, the thing happens over the course of the summer and the spring, is that garden just sort of disintegrates. I mean, it just sort of, it stops growing and then it falls apart. And then once autumn gets there, then it's like Father Mulcahy's corn garden. It's just sitting there just taking up space, and then it starts to come apart in the wind and the rain, and then you've got leaves not only from around the neighborhood, not only from the trees, and then you got everybody else's lawn clippings, but then you got all the stuff from your garden. Again, that is, your tomato plants just sort of start to fall apart as autumn arrives. They blow all over the place, and then every time you try to go to your car, you're wading ankle deep through a bunch of decaying, gushy vegetable matter, and you just don't have to deal with that. And then it gets slippery, and then I mentioned the thing of the dogs going outside, and then the dogs go to do their business. And, of course, it's wintertime, so the dogs aren't going to go, all the way to the end of the block. Or where the dogs get, 3 inches outside the door, they're like, I'm right here, man. I'm going. And if you're me, you kind of scoot them off with the side of your foot. You kind of go, no, further. And you sort of shove them down the steps. But they still go no further than the dogs will basically go far enough that I can't kick them further away.
Can you blame them, really?
No, I can't. I'm just saying I can't. So Max, it's like he'll get down. He doesn't even leave the steps sometimes. It's like he'll just basically straddle the bottom step of the porch and the actual flat of the sidewalk and go right there. And again, it's 35 degrees. I mean, and he's without his sweater most of the time. So it's not like I can blame him for when I get it done and come back inside. But then you've got all that stuff down there, which you can see sometimes. But if it's sort of camouflaged by all of this, the stuff that's just been coming out of your rain gutters and all the plants that have been overgrowing and falling apart, it just becomes a disaster. And let's just be honest, leaving aside the pet issue, the front of your house can just look terrible. I mean, it just looks like it's abandoned half the time. So it's unpleasant, it's messy, it's tiring, it's exhausting. You get all wet and just, and filthy. So you don't have to deal with that. You call CJ's High Climbing Services at 503-228-9278. 503-228-9278. Whether that is Sean, Bo, Lauren, or any of the guys, they'll come on out there. And of course, they are employed by CJ's High Climbing. Means they got liability insurance. Means they got workers' comp. So you don't have to worry about they slip and fall and any of that stuff. It's all taken care of. And they're not just going to pick up the stuff and move it somewhere else. They're going to make sure that it actually is that it is properly disposed of. So you find out more by going to CJsHighClimbing.com. That is CJsHighClimbing.com, or call 503-228-9278. That is 503-228-9278. CJ's High Climbing. They are a proud sponsor of this, the Rick Emerson radio program.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us. It is 503-505-6964. So we will, in all likelihood, we'll do that zombie top five. Probably not tomorrow, because I got a I got one I'm putting together for tomorrow that is theme appropriate for tomorrow, for Tuesday. We'll have further opportunities to use the Zombie Top 5 because we got Walking Dead happening every week, every Sunday on AMC. Boy, and just... So you saw Walking Dead, you saw Eastbound and Down.
I did,
so,
indeed.
Just as a side note, are you hip with the Breaking Bad?
No, I don't watch Breaking Bad.
You gotta watch that. It's a...
I was just not able to get past the first episode, and I'm fairly sure that, yeah, I would love it if I did, but I tried twice to watch the first episode, and it was just...
Was it too grim?
Yeah, it was just so grim, and I at the time I was trying to watch it, I just wasn't in a place where I could deal with any more grimness.
Well, I will tell you, I get what you're talking about there, especially because when I started trying to watch... I was trying to watch Breaking Bad, right? I think we got fired, and I thought, my life has gotten bleak enough for a while. But it was that thing where, like... Is it in Beyond Thunderdome? What is it with the guy? There's the arrow that's pierced the side of the car, the door of the car, and it's gone into his arm. And Gibson says, okay, we're going to do this on one, and then he just opens the door and yanks the arrow out. That's how you got to do it with Breaking Bad. You just got to embrace it and just get right on into it. Because once you can get past the, oh my God, it's stripping away the layers of my soul like varnish off a cheap table, you're going to find, I'm saying for my money, it is currently the best program airing on American television. I mean, and I'm taking into account, like, Boardwalk Empire, everything. Mad Men. And I love me some Mad Men. You know I do. But Breaking Bad is currently the best program on television of those that I watch and am familiar with. So it's quite something. But AMC, which has Breaking Bad, which has Mad Men, they're really on a roll. They're just batting 1,000 right now. So last night was the premiere of Walking Dead, based on the graphic novel of the same name. Your thoughts, Don Taylor?
I was interested to see how they were going to pace it because I've read the first five collections, the first five books.
And I have not. I have picked up the graphic novel like 100 times to read it, and then I just haven't. So I have never seen, I've seen it, but I've not read the graphic novel.
And it looks like they're taking a nice leisurely pace with it because they know they've got a lot of story to get to, and there's no reason to like rush through it. So yeah, and the thing with graphic novels in particular is that when you try to put them to film, it just starts going so much faster than you would expect it to, because most comic books, there's not a lot to them, really. And Walking Dead is really rich, and there's a lot of story there. And yeah, it looks like they're taking a nice slow pace with it, and it's very true to the feeling and the visual.
Does it maintain
style.
The tone of the
yeah.
of the book?
Yeah, and there's obviously already from the outset, there's a couple of differences in sort of setting and stuff. But no, it was really terrific. But yeah, it is grim, and it's going to continue to be grim. There were a couple of moments in the pilot where they managed to lighten it ever so slightly.
Right.
You know, it's like with him like taking off on the horse for the first time and things like that. But it's like there's not a lot of places you're going to be able to inject humor in this story. There really isn't. And no, it was beautifully done, and it was also really graphic for television. I mean, granted, you know, it is cable, but even cable, they take a lot of taste factors and stuff into consideration. And this was like serious horror movie graphics in a couple of places.
And I think that must be, that's a couple things. I mean, that's the that they probably just were convinced that, I think that AMC has earned the clout to do that because they have the success of Breaking Bad and Mad Men. And so they, you know, they're no longer, because you know, some of the networks are so leery about pushing the envelope because they don't want to get pushback from the government or from parents groups or from, you know, whatever, like, you know, blue hairs who get all, you know, up in arms about that. But I think AMC has now got enough clout, and because I don't know who their parent company is. AMC is owned by, I imagine, some conglomerate,
sure.
Fox or somebody. But whoever it is that owns it probably figures like they can take the lumps at this point because they've got enough momentum and enough inertia with those other series that even if there was any sort of a pushback, it's not going to threaten them too badly because they've got so much money coming in and they've got so much traction with those other shows. Also, that's got to be a lot of Frank Darabont, who has clout because he in addition to Shawshank Redemption, he did The Mist, so he's got a lot of street cred there. But he also is just a big player in Hollywood because he was a screenwriter and a script doctor for so long. I think he wrote either the first or the first two Mission Impossibles. So he's a guy that actually has a lot of, you know, brings a lot to bear there in terms of influence. There was a great moment of, I don't know if it was intended or unintended comedy, and it was when he first gets out of the hospital and which was really masterfully done because, again, not having seen, not having read the graphic novel, but knowing the basic thrust, which is that, you know, it takes place in the sort of zombie apocalypse in a way that we've seen them before, but that they take to an even greater extent, which is where zombies are basically just treated as a natural part of the environment. They're a natural but very dangerous element. Sort of the comparison somebody once made is like, imagine if sharks lived on land. Yeah. They said that's basically what it's like. But they did that transition of him emerging into the outside world and kind of seeing what had become of it, the fall of man or whatever. But there was that moment when the legless ghoul is like pulling itself across and he jumps on a bicycle and pedals away,
yeah,
which is sort of horrible and hilarious all at once. It was really good. I was impressed with the texture of it and with the fact that it didn't hurry itself right out of the gate. When it shows him having to shoot the girl, the little girl zombie, and then it cuts to him and his partner sitting in the car talking, and they're just having that sort of like wacky kind of Pulp Fiction banter back and forth. I was actually still unclear about whether that was before or after the whole zombie apocalypse, because I felt like, well, maybe this is how man has adapted to live with zombies as a part of the world. So they kind of were playing their cards pretty close. I wasn't able to telegraph everything just by seeing it. I was impressed by that.
It was really a really smart way to start it, though, because it first of all, it gives the audience a good idea of what it is they're in for, what they can expect, and also just having the very first zombie you encounter in this, at the very top of the first episode, and have it be a little girl.
Yeah.
And he has to shoot it in the head. That's basically, you know, Darabont saying to you, okay, I'm not pulling any punches here. You know, we're not going to be playing.
Right. Well, this Baz Luhrmann said the greatest thing one time. The guy, he did Moulin Rouge and you know, Romeo and Juliet, and he said this thing on the commentary for Moulin Rouge, which is a movie I love quite a lot. He said the first scene or the first few moments in a movie, he said, you are making a contract with the audience. This is the kind of film you are about to see. Maybe they like it, maybe they don't, but the first few minutes of a film, you are saying, this is what this movie is going to be like. So just so you know, and he said, then your job, for the most part, is to not break that contract. And that was Darabont's whole thing. He's like, you know, by just shooting a little girl in the face, he says, like, here's what you're in for. Stay or go, but this is what it is. So.
It was beautifully done. And then you get the credits, and then he actually introduces you to the character, and you start getting an idea. And it was really efficiently done, too.
Yeah.
We know all about his entire relationship with his wife and his kid and everything purely through conversation.
Right.
There wasn't any unnecessary scenes of him being at home and happy and her cooking him pancakes.
Awkward expository dialogue.
And the annoying child saying, yeah, I love you, Daddy. Be safe at work today. You know, none of that crap actually happened.
I do wonder what this means for the World War Z movie, because everybody, when the World War Z movie got optioned, which I think Brad Pitt's production company, Plan B yeah. Pictures or whatever they're called, they're the ones who optioned the Brooks novel World War Z. And everybody, I mean, when I say everybody, I mean people on the internet, everybody was saying, and specifically everybody in the Ain't It Cool talkback, it was just saying, well, like, you can't do World War Z as a movie. It really has to be done as a miniseries on HBO or something. And I wonder if this is basically it. If this is, I'm not saying World War Z can't still work, you know, and they're not still going to make it or whatever, but I'm just saying, I wonder if, like, this is all, even if that never happens, if this is basically what we've got.
Because I think there's still a, you could, I mean, there's no dearth of zombie movies, and this isn't going to be the last zombie movie. And certainly World War Z could be done either as a feature film or as a miniseries, as kind of a Ken Burns Civil War sort of a thing, which is what the book was presented as
right.
to begin with. So I think that, and that would be a completely different sort of project than this, despite the fact they both have zombies.
Now I'm just picturing a bunch of zombies in baseball garb sitting around a fire in a sepia-tone photograph. Well, the camera moves around inside the still shot and a harmonica plays on the soundtrack.
Zombie Lincoln sent a letter to his wife, which read...
Well, a Scott Joplin song plays underneath. All right. Well, from the... not the ridiculous to the... From the something to the something. Let's talk about Kenny Powers.
Kenny Powers.
By the way, how great... How great was the opening of Eastbound and Down last night?
Oh,
where
yeah.
I actually stopped for a second, and I went back and I checked it. I'm like, am I watching the right show? I thought that I'd tripped and fallen into some other series, or that, like, Kenny and Stevie were in a theater somewhere, like, watching a movie, and, like, that was the movie they were watching. Because it just shows a guy who I did not immediately recognize getting out of rehab. And then I realize the guy getting out of rehab is the guy who swindled him into thinking he was going to be getting a baseball contract in the first season.
Yeah.
And so I'm watching and I'm thinking, who is this? Is this a movie within a movie? What seems to be happening here? And that it is that guy. It's the guy who, like, you know, had lied to Kenny and said that he was going to get him back into baseball, just revealing as he's getting out of rehab that he, like, effed his sponsor's wife. And then it just goes right to the credits. You know, that's always my favorite moment of that show.
I love that actor. I can never remember his name. He just ended his run on Party Down, which was on Stars or some backwater cable channel, which was hilarious but unseen by anyone because it was on Stars.
Right.
So, yeah, and that guy is so funny. He is so good.
Speaking of people who are just incredibly good on Eastbound and Down, we've talked a lot about Danny McBride and how that he has no self-consciousness, that he just throws himself into the role. He doesn't wink or nod. He doesn't do like some damn David Spade thing where you make sure that, you know, you always know that it's just David Spade because the thing about comedy actors sometimes is they themselves, the real person, the real David Spade, the real Rob Schneider, the real whoever, they don't want to look silly.
Chevy Chase sabotaged his own movie career by doing that for everything like post Fletch.
Because
really.
Yeah, because they don't want to look foolish themselves, and it's not just comedy actors. I think Will Smith for a long time was in danger of doing that, where he never, ever, ever wanted to look weak or vulnerable or silly, and so he had this like one bulletproof persona for like every film he did.
Well, Malkovich, John Malkovich is guilty of that because when I just recently saw Red and was so impressed to see him actually you know commit
risks.
To the character for because. He always anymore seems to just be taking a paycheck and coasting through and basically letting you know that he thinks he's above this.
Right. And Danny McBride doesn't do any of that. But, you know, I should have looked up the guy's name. That guy who plays Stevie, though, he really deserves a special notice for being unafraid to just put himself out there as not just, like, the butt of the joke, not just the boob, but, I mean, I don't ever know that I've seen a character like him on television. I mean, to say that he plays the sort of goat, the kind of the retard, is just, I mean, to undersell it to such a degree.
As an actor, he puts himself through so much humiliation, you know, between the things that Kenny says to him, the things that physically he has to do, like that scene where he's walking around in the thong.
God damn.
His sex scene.
Oh, God. Where he's just,
I mean,
with what's her name, the neighbor woman, and they're doing like the weird, like sexless kissing and making out, which is like hilarious and creepy and icky and fantastic, like all at once. It really was, I mean. And Matthew McConaughey, I did not anticipate.
No.
I try never to watch the trailers for that. I try never to see what's coming up.
I wasn't expecting Matthew McConaughey, and he was great.
And just that long, I mean, it probably was only like 20 seconds long, but just seemed like an endless profane monologue about the three guys all like doing each other later and having a lot of gay sex. Where it just sort of goes on in like this, not just profane, but like hilariously, creatively profane way that you've never really heard done.
And profane to the point where Kenny Powers himself, who tends to have something of a silver tongue when it comes to like crude profanity, he himself, the character, just finally just has no response to the things that Matthew McConaughey is saying. He's run out of riposte.
And then the McConaughey just by going like, "And I'm gay." So then you said that it looked like a finale, and you're right, although I guess there's one more episode left. So it ends with him putting on this great, like, white suit and getting ready to go back to the States and to reclaim April as his own. And he's going to be playing AA ball or whatever for Matthew McConaughey.
Oh, God, and his goodbye with the whatever her name is, the woman, when he was explaining to her that, you know, she has a sweet, sweet ass, but, you know.
All the ass magic in Mexico can't keep Kenny Powers here.
I'm a breast man. I know that hurts your feelings.
I actually made a note. I wrote down to myself all the ass magic in Mexico, and I'm going to use that as sort of like all the tea in China kind of a thing. So we got one more episode. So next week is the finale. You said it's already been renewed for a third season,
yes.
Though, which is fantastic. Awesome. All right. So we're about to the end of that series. So you got to watch that. You got to watch season one and then catch up with season two of Eastbound and Down. All right, and I'll finish Dexter tonight or not. We'll figure it out then.
Okay, whatever.
All right, we should bring the curtain down on this. We want to thank Mr. Aaron Duran from Geek in the City for joining us today, geekinthecity.com, geekinthecity.com. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have an election-themed top five. At the news desk today, Dawn Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, and chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Don't forget the Legion of News episode from earlier today. Encore is next, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every day from the studios of the Emerson News Network, right here in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. As always, the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by a generous grant from all y'all, and so forth. I've got nothing.
Where my dinner?
It is Monday, November 1st, 2010, and that is the frequency, Kenneth. I just like to just sort of trail out on that sort of elliptical
I
note.
I have an iPhone.
Thank you. We'll see you all tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Be safe. Bye now.
Good to see you.
Thank you for looking after us.
That's right.
Okay.
You got it, Abby.
Barbara, did you vote? Did you vote?
I voted for all of y'all.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. So the stuff, where am I dinner? I'm going to get it.